Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, along the way, if you have any questions, comments, feel free to give us a call at any time throughout the broadcast. 806-745-5800. Call or text. That's 806-745-5800. Of course, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Of course, you can check us out on the website, veritasmedical.com. And let me say a good morning to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, and Melody Wilkes, health coach.
Hello.
Which I should pay more attention to you, and maybe I wouldn't be missing so many radio shows. Or even Dr. Edwards, for that matter. Or maybe like, even other my doctors on the show. I don't know. You take all this stuff, and I don't take it, and then I revert to antibiotics like a lot of us do.
Well, you just kind of take it for a couple days, and then you stop.
Yeah. Because I want it done quick.
Well, don't we all?
You're the standard American.
Standard
American.
I want it
my way right now, right this minute. Microwave society. Standard American.
Standard American.
Yours is a lot of a lot of unique and great qualities about you, Wade. I'm glad to see you're upright and still alive this week after that last rough week.
I'll tell you, the last show I did was your program last week. And we talked about all this stuff floating around, and I said, "Yeah, I'm not feeling all the greatest." But anyway, right after that show, I went home and said, "Okay, I'm going to have to take a day or two." Ended up being a whole week, and I'm back, but I'm still just barely.
Yeah. Hey, how long do these germs live on surfaces and clothes and?
Oh, different germs. It's different. Bacteria, not so long. Viruses, longer, which that's what mostly we deal with. The flu's a virus, all the flu-like viruses. But
they're everywhere.
I don't know exactly how long. I know they've got to be inside of a cell to do their to replicate and continue to live a long time. So
you think you get more contamination from, like, surfaces or like someone coughing and you?
I think it's more that direct contact. I mean, doorknobs for sure, handlebars, doorknobs, someone that could have just coughed or sneezed and touched that. But just random surfaces, throughout your day, probably not so much. But the ones that are going to be high traffic, which are the handlebars. But in the air, I mean, these droplets, one sneeze, I don't know how many feet that travels. I'm not the expert in virology, on spreading of viruses, but a sneeze and a cough and that kind of thing, these droplets really travel in the air. So that's probably the biggest thing is these closed quarters, like a classroom. You got 25 kids or 30 kids in there, mm-hmm. all within a 50-foot radius, and one cough or sneeze cover the whole class.
Well, I
always feel like I want to hold my breath. I don't know if that helps or not.
It could cause some issues with that.
Well, what I've been trying to preach a little bit, put a Facebook post up last week, is we don't need to be scared of all these bugs. Yeah, this is a bad flu this year. I read last night, 1 out of 10 deaths last week in America. I think there were like 40,000 deaths, and 4,000 of them were influenza-related. So I'm not downplaying the significance of this virus. It's a bad one, and it's a bad year. It's a very powerful virus. But what we, in our very next breath, we should be saying, I wonder what's wrong with our terrain. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with the average American immune system? Why are these bugs allowed to get in us and replicate so much before our immune system finally can run them down? I mean, one of our six kiddos got the flu, most likely from her classroom. We got real proactive at home with some preventative things, not Tamiflu, which is, we can talk about that later. It's not very effective at all. And it took a whole lot of lawsuits to even get the data to prove that it's not effective. But again, that's another story. We didn't do that. We did some other things. The other five kids, including our six-month-old infant, never got the flu. Jamie and I never got the flu. Which just reiterated to me, there's some very effective things you can do. But the first thing is your terrain that's got to be worked on from, what my post on Facebook said last week was next year's flu shot that you're thinking about getting. The more effective way to prevent next year's flu is to start today with your terrain building, primarily your gut. all the probiotics in your gut. A high sugar diet. There was a study out of, I think this is Loma Linda back, it was over 10 years ago. 8 tablespoons of sugar decreased white blood cell function 40%. Ooh. I mean, that's half your troops almost right there, diminished by the standard American diet. And people think 8 tablespoons, that's a lot. No, it's not. It's in, that's in your normal diet. That you don't realize it. It's added to everything. It's in your ketchup, your spaghetti sauce, your cereal, your crackers,
yogurt. I was trying to get yogurt for the girls. I'm like, my gosh, 22 grams of sugar in a yogurt.
Yeah. I was in the airport and went to the quote unquote healthy little fast food store in the airport. And I knew, you know, it wasn't going to be anything healthy, but just for fun, I went and flipped over a few things. Of course, there's a lot of yogurts there. Mm-hmm. 20 to 30 grams of sugar in the yogurt cup. Mm-hmm. And then, like, some of those bars, Nature's Valley, and some of those other bars that you think these granola bars are healthy-ish, same thing, 20 to 30 grams. Then there's that Naked Juice, and it was 20 to 30 grams. And I thought, man, if I didn't know better, if I wasn't educated by Veritas, you know, I was just Joe Schmo, I was skipping the 7-Eleven in the airport and going to this healthy convenience store in the airport, mm-hmm. grabbing a Nature's Valley, a yogurt, and a Naked Juice. Yeah. I would have been jacking my blood sugar up more than a Big Red. And that's what people don't realize, that sugar's in everything, and it hampers your white blood cells from doing their job.
So let me ask you that. That's a very powerful statement you just said, and I think we ought to say that again about how – so when I was sick – one of the things that I tried to refrain from, I wasn't doing it all the time, to be fair, but to not have a lot of anything sugar, no sweets, cut it out, watch all that stuff while you're ill.
Oh, yeah,
agree with that?
For sure, 100%.
Because all that illness does is just the sugar feeds it, does it not?
I don't know about feeding it. I mean, definitely sugar feeds candida, which is a germ that's not going to give you flu. It's a yeast, you know, yeast infections, vaginal yeast infections, stuff like that. But a lot of skin infections are candida or yeast.
Okay.
That's different, though. So sugar feeds that directly. But mainly the way sugar is going to hurt you in this situation, this viral deal or a bacterial deal, is the immune system's handcuffed. I mean, you just told half your troops to go back to the barracks. There's no fight here. So it's not likely you're going to win that fight. That was a 1973 study. I just found it. Loma Linda University. 100 grams of sugar equivalent to 2.5 cans of soda. But like we just said, 100 grams, you get to that real fast if you're not watching it. I mean, you start your day with a bowl of, you know, cereal and skim milk and OJ and toast and strawberry jelly, you're at 100 grams. I mean, yogurt for sure. If you got two of those cups of yogurt instead of just one, you're at 60 grams right there, right off the bat. So people don't realize they're getting the sugar in the average American 1 to 2 pounds, or excuse me, 1 pound of sugar every 2 to 3 days. The second big disruptor of terrain besides the diet, and that was just one tiny piece of the diet, the sugar thing. We haven't even gotten into the probiotics and your gut flora and how that affects your immune system. But this was 2004 American Psychological Association article. Dr. Suzanne Sergstrom at the University of Kentucky, Dr. Gregory Miller, PhD, University of British Columbia. They looked at over 300 different studies and kind of averaged them, combined them. It's called a meta-analysis. And these were studies on how stress affects your health. And just one quote from that study, for someone that's under chronic stress, for stress of any significant duration, from a few days to a few months or years, chronic stress, as happens in real life, all aspects of immunity went downhill. Thus, long-term or chronic stress, through too much wear and tear, can ravage the immune system. And that's what I think is part of the contributor to the flu that, and all these bugs. I mean, my wife was reading me a bunch of texts. She's in this group text message from the kids' school. And these moms just talking about strep. This one mom had strep 4 times since, I think, November or something. Mm-hmm. An adult with 4 strep since November. The kids have been sick with this, that, and other, all these different rashes and lymphadenopathy and blah, blah, blah. the immune system, it's just ravaged. And that, like the article just said, chronic stress will do it. Our kids are under tons of stress these days. The diet will do it. I mean, our terrain, it's totally shot. And so that's why we don't need to be in fear mode. Oh, no, the flu's going to get me. And again, I'm not downplaying the severity of these bugs. I'm saying we don't need to just sit around and be scared and think, well, let's just use some hand sanitizer. There's so much more to building your terrain. And it all goes back to the whole germ theory. That's Pasteur, Louis Pasteur in the germ theory versus Claude Bernard in the terrain theory. And Bernard stood up and told everybody, no, Pasteur's wrong. The germs aren't everything. The terrain is everything. The germ is nothing. And he drank a glass of cholera right after that speech. And he didn't get sick. And his point was, these germs can't set up shop in us if we have a good terrain. So I think that's really what we need to focus on. Another article I read that just sort of highlights this whole terrain thing. Again, a fear-mongering kind of article. Don't look up. Astonishing number of viruses are floating down on us from the sky.
Coming from the orbit.
Yeah, the sky's
crazy. I read that story.
And it's been going on forever. I mean, billions of viruses and millions
alien
of
viruses.
Bacteria. Mm-hmm. They just get caught up in the wind and the jet stream and the stratosphere, atmosphere. I mean, the article kind of went into the scientific detail, but the point is, these bugs travel in the air, and then they drop down on us, and we breathe them in. Well, okay, no big deal. God gave us an immune system to deal with that. And that's what we need to be focusing on, is how does God's immune system work? How do we keep it tuned up? How do we support it? How do we encourage it to work better? And your standard American, everything they're doing is hampering that immune system. So,
do you think the drought affects any of that, or do you think it's better to be in a less moist environment?
I mean, drought, you don't have the moisture, you know, more dirt, dust, wind. I mean, I think probably things are getting picked up more, I would guess. When it's humidity, you're going to, the wind and dust.
Wednesday marks the longest drought in climatic history for Lubbock.
Really?
Yeah. It'll be over 90 days without any measurable precipitation. Over 3 months with nothing. And I'm telling you, back to Melody's point, I'm convinced that that is why Lubbock, I think, is the reason why we're listed as number two, the sickest city in America right now.
I read that too.
Yes.
The number two municipality in the country as far as the number of flu cases, the severity and number of flu cases. And that was my immediate thought, was what's different about the terrain of people, internal terrain, you know, of people in Lubbock.
So many allergies.
And obviously our external terrain.
The blowing around, and it's just bad.
The cloud of
humidifier in your house?
For sure. I think that'd be a great idea, humidifiers. What you're going to run into with too much humidity is more the fungal stuff, yeast, fungus, you know, mold type stuff. But I think in this situation, we're probably stirring up a lot of viruses that float around more.
Because we've had no rain.
Yeah.
Nothing to balance out Mother Nature.
Right.
I mean, this is a severe drought situation, and it's causing, you know, people to, and on top of that, being cold, and so you stay in more, and stuff's blowing around. It's just not good.
Yeah. But if you've nourished your internal terrain.
True.
And a big part of that is nourishing the gut flora. Just like we talk about with our food, farmers need to quit being so focused on above the ground, on the plant and the crop and the production. They need to be focused on the soil. If you get the terrain right and you get really, really, really healthy soil, teeming with microbes and earthworms and organic matter and all that, your plants can't help but to be very productive and disease-free and bountiful, and the food will be very nutrient-dense. I was just talking to a friend of mine over the weekend. He's a local tractor manufacturing company, and he was talking about kind of a new avenue that they're looking at pursuing with their tractor production. It's been all big commercial tractor, you know, 40,000 acre farmers that they sell to, these big sprayers and stuff. But he said this new trend of people wanting not just organic food. He said there's a 40,000-acre organic farmer or farm out in California that they sell to, because they'll spray those things too, just with different things. But the point is, the tractor they're looking at making now is an old school, like 1940s model kind of, or a modern day version of these 1940s tractors that were for small plots, you know, 5, 10, 20, 50 acres, but this local production, small farm, organic, where the soil is the most important thing, and they care for the soil. And when you have that good terrain, your food will be nutrient-dense. That nutrient-dense food translates in our body. That's what people don't realize. It's beyond vitamins and minerals, which copper is the number one mineral that runs your immune system. Copper happens to be... Farmers, or small farms, organic small farms that are going to produce food just for their neighborhood, for their community, for their city, because this food is not, even organic food is not near as beneficial as fresh picked food. I mean, you can grow organic all day long on a 40,000-acre farm, but you still got to pick it 10 days early to ship it across the country to sit on the shelf at the grocery store. And it's really more about this vine-ripened food. That's when the vitamin and mineral content is richest, all these phytonutrients, thousands and thousands and thousands of chemicals in the plant called phytochemicals that interact with our receptors on our cell membranes that stimulate the immune system in a positive way. So that's what we've got to get back to realizing, is the food is incredible if it's produced the right way and if we consume it.
I bought some broccoli sprouts the other day, and I noticed that it said it was hydroponically grown.
Mm-hmm.
So that means there's no soil.
Right. Yeah. And this is just my guessing. I haven't done the research on it, but my guessing is based in my belief that God designed it perfectly and beautifully, and we don't need to mess with his original design. In the soil, some very symbiotic relationship there that produces great things in that broccoli. However, in the good, better, best scenario, I think the hydroponics, especially if you have the fish in there, fish fertilizing naturally. Some good mineralization of that broccoli sprout or lettuce or whatever you're growing. But the biggest thing, again, is freshly picked. A friend of mine does a huge aquaponics greenhouses down in Seminole, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's clean and spectacular. This lettuce is so rich and green. You hold his lettuce up to store-bought lettuce, it doesn't even compare. And then he's got tilapia that's the cleanest, freshest, best tilapia. Juicy Lucy's have it for sale on her food truck Tuesday at our parking lot at the Veritas Medical Clinic. But my point is, the food he's making, that lettuce and that tilapia, I can almost guarantee if you test the nutrient density of it compared to what you get at the grocery store, it's going to blow it away. Is it as good as if the soil were really, really rich in your backyard and you grew that lettuce in your backyard and you went and picked it right before dinner? You know, that nutrient content probably is going to be better than the hydroponic one. But when you're looking at all your options, are you just going to go to the grocery store and buy something that was, you know, cut 10 days ago down in Mexico or wherever and shipped here? For sure, I'd go with the hydroponic. So you got to look at your options, good, better, and best. But my gut feeling is that a soil-based is going to be the best.
What are Juicy Lucy's hours? Tuesdays at what time?
It's from 3 to 6 in the parking lot, 1802 East 50th. Which is on the east side of the interstate, Martin Luther King and 50th. There's a big parking lot there. That's the parking lot of Vertical Turbine Specialist, the manufacturing company that houses us. So our clinic is in the same spot. But big yellow truck, says Juicy Lucy.
Does she do cash, debit?
All the above. And if you'll email her or get on her Facebook page, you know, the day before or whenever, or you can pre-order. She'll have it all sacked up and ready to go. You just walk in, pay, and leave. So, and I'm sure that it'd be good for her too to get a pre-order, but you can't just walk in. I know she sells out of stuff. We've been pushing the beef liver quite a bit lately, and I know she sold out of that pretty quick last week, I think.
I like beef liver.
And that's where the copper's at. Everybody thinks liver and iron, and yeah, there's some iron in it, but there's twice as much copper. Copper is not only the mineral of the immune system, it's the mineral that gives us energy. And the organs need a lot of energy because they do a lot of work, so there's a lot of copper in the organ meats.
It's a challenge, though, to get people to eat it. I sliced it up real thin one time and put it in hamburger meat and served it with spaghetti. I didn't fool my girls.
We were trying to, like, sneak it in. And the girls were like, there's something weird about that. I was like, oh, really? What's weird about it? I don't know what you're talking about.
They know me now. They're like, what did you put in this?
Well, there's a recipe that they'll know it's different, but it tastes good. And it's a combination of ground beef, ground liver, and bacon. And you make meatballs out of it.
Oh.
And it's that bacon that really does
a trick.
Yeah, I was
going to say, anything with bacon is good.
Yeah, that's always our answer to everything.
I can just eat it straight. I don't know what the big deal is. I mean, liver, so what? Back when I was hunting all the time, and I would harvest lots of Canadian geese during the season, ducks. Well, they'd have pretty sizable hearts because they're flying around all the time. They got big hearts to fly, you know.
Yeah.
Got to pump that blood, you know, flying all the way from Canada. Well, I would eat their hearts. I'd cook them up on the grill.
Hearts.
I love the hearts of Canada
geese. Yeah,
the
girls would eat the dove hearts.
Yeah, I mean, we ate the duck hearts and the goose hearts all the time. And it was really, and I didn't know at the time like I know now, but how nutritious that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A Canada goose heart is an amazing, nutritious little morsel.
Yeah.
I mean, they're about the size of a Skoal long cut can, maybe.
So, babe, there's Canadian geese everywhere. You need to go hunting.
I know. I need to get back into that, but it's a lot of hard work, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to get up at 3 in the morning and put out your 400 or 500 decoys and everything else, but it was good. And because of eating that way, like hunters, a lot of us that hunt a lot do.
Yeah,
eating just regular beef liver is nothing. It tastes fine
right.
to me.
Yeah, well, but most people aren't like you and can just eat it like that.
That's
but
true.
I want to encourage people. There's lots of recipes out there.
Yeah,
if you
right.
soak it in, I think this recipe soaked it in vinegar overnight. But soaking it in milk or buttermilk overnight too helps a lot. So there's lots of tricks. And organ meats have always been coveted by, you know, traditionally societies, cultures have coveted the organ meats.
All right, we'll go to the text line. This is James asking, I heard somewhere that alcohol is toxic animal, I guess, prince of yeast waste, and that the liver turns it into formaldehyde before it converts it into CO2 and H2O and excretes it from the body.
Say the first part of that again.
I heard somewhere that alcohol is toxic animal waste, yeast.
Oh.
That the liver turns into formaldehyde before it converts into CO2 and H2O and excretes from the body.
I'm not sure about toxic animal waste. What I have heard is the candida that we were talking about earlier in the show, if you've got candida metabolizing the sugar from your diet, the glucose, the byproducts of that, basically that's fermentation.
Yeah.
You get yeast, you get sugar, fermentation comes. The byproducts of that, similar to the byproducts of alcohol fermentation, can damage the liver and cause liver inflammation. That's something I've heard that's somewhat related to that text, it sounds like, maybe.
What about the idea that the liver, you know, when we start talking about beef liver, and of course if the most preferred is beef liver that's, you know, grass-raised, understand that, but the liver being, you know, the cleansing organ of the animal, and the fact that it's probably got a bunch of junk in it that may not be healthy.
Myth.
Is that total myth?
It is the cleansing organ, one of the cleansing organs.
Yeah.
You know, the lung, skin, and kidney also do that. So what the liver does, the blood filters through the liver, and the liver will take various toxins and conjugate them. What that means is it's just a chemical process. It's snapping on a molecule of some sort to make it water soluble or fat soluble, and then it sends it on down the road. It doesn't store it in the liver. So it's working on the toxin and then moving it on down the road.
It's a quick deal.
Yeah, so it moves right on. If it made it water soluble, it moves it on to the kidney to urinate it out. If it made it fat soluble, which mostly a lot of toxins are turned into fat soluble, and it stores it in your fat. Well, where's the fat? It's all intertwined in our muscle. So we're actually the muscle meats, which is what everyone's eating, your ribeyes and fillets and T-bones.
The marbling.
That's the marbling. That's the muscle meat has the toxins in it and the fat of the muscle.
So should
meat.
I eat a marbled steak, doctor, or should I stick with the lean cut?
I mean, it goes back to how good is your terrain. I'm going to eat a grass-fed, clean cow that I know where it came from. Are there a few toxins in that fat? Yep. And my body is able to handle it. God designed our body to handle these toxins that we consume in our food. Now, we don't want to overburden our body and purposely put in way more toxins than it can handle. Just read an article this morning. This is a total other subject we'll talk about next week, maybe. 5,000 micrograms of aluminum by the time a kid's 2 years old, if they follow the routine vaccine schedule. And the allowable limit for an infant's 10 micrograms. But that's one of my points, is we overburden the body with all these toxins, aluminum being one of them. But we're just inundated with toxins in America in particular. And so some people can't handle it. And you get to this point where your bathtub's overflowing. The drain can only drain out so much at one time, and you're pouring, you got 10 faucets turned on into that bathtub and only one drain. Your body has a drain to get rid of toxins, but it can be overwhelmed if you're putting too much in to begin with. So I'm going to go eat my steak. It might have a little marbling with a little toxins in it, but my body is being stewarded in a way that it can handle those toxins.
So are you a filet mignon guy or a ribeye guy?
It depends on the season. I'm not a stuck-in-the-rut guy, so I'll fluctuate. I go back and forth. But back to that question. So that's a common misconception with the liver. It deals with toxins, but it moves them on to other places. So I wouldn't worry about the toxicity issue, and I wouldn't worry about the iron issue. There is iron in the liver, but way more copper, and that's what we're really going for is the copper.
Well, I just know that we had a big steak on Saturday night. Of course, you go out to any steakhouse in Lubbock, family of five, you're over $100 like nobody's business. But everybody wants to get the marbling. It's added flavor. And I'm just not really into that. I like filet mignon. I like the leaner cuts of meats, and especially filet that's soft. And you don't have the marbling in there. And I always thought about what you just said. I knew that.
Yeah.
And I always thought, well, I don't want to eat a steak with a bunch of greasy fat and stuff in it like that.
Right.
But I don't know.
Right. I mean, I'm with you. I usually go with the filet too. Nourish Caveman. That's a website. The Nourished Caveman.
The Nourished Caveman.
It's full of all kinds of paleo and keto recipes, but just look up keto, paleo, liver, bacon, meatball on the Nourished Caveman website. You'll find the recipe.
All right. Welcome back to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Of course, check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Of course, our direct office number, 1-855-6-VERITAS. You can check it out there as well. Of course, along the way, if you have any questions, you can always give us a call or text, 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800.
Well, I was going to talk just a little bit about how Tamiflu works or doesn't work.
Do you want me to read that text?
Is there a text question? Yeah, let's do that.
Would Dr. Edwards have any suggestions to relieve frequent constipation? Mm-hmm. Drink lots of beer?
Magnesium.
That's what I usually do.
I'll give three different answers. We'll ignore Wade there.
No.
Conventional answer, take Miralax. That's what I used to tell people all the time. Works great to relieve that symptom. But as my first Tuesday talk last week went in depth in how drugs work, there's always unintended consequences to taking man-made chemical pharmaceutical agents. You'll get your symptom relieved at the expense of all the unintended consequences. One of the unintended consequences of Miralax, I've since learned, is it causes leaky gut. It punches holes in the wall of the gut, basically, just like glyphosate does. But that's one answer. Then the integrative answer would be take a lot of probiotics and lots of different probiotics, and you could take a lot of magnesium, and that'd probably help too. And then the Veritas answer would be let's do the full approach. You're constipated for a reason. That reason probably falls within the realm of nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace. Some people, they're simply dehydrated. You've got to get good amounts of clean water in. The nutrition speaks for itself. If you're not eating real food that has tons of fiber, your colon health isn't going to be good. You're not feeding the good bacteria as well. So you've got to really focus on real food and fermented foods, stay hydrated, and moving around. So you know, it's kind of makes common sense, but even the science shows people that just sit all day, you're less likely. Even in the hospital, we know this. We want people after a surgery to get up and get moving. We want those bowels to start moving. We got to walk you. So you need movement. And of course, if you're stressed all the time, that sympathetic dominance shuts down your GI tract. You don't need to worry about digesting food and pooping when you're trying to fight that bear in fight or flight mode. So you can't be in fight or flight mode all the time. So to me now, constipation is just another symptom, another smoke from the fire that your life's out of order. Nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace, when those things occur, then the bowels just work. But while you're working on those four pillars, probably I'd be pushing a lot more magnesium and probiotics to give
you the
short answer.
There's a tea called Smooth Move.
Smooth Move tea.
It'll get the job done, too.
Yeah, that'll drink it before bed and by morning.
It's got Senna in it, mm-hmm. Senacod or Senna, and that's you can just go get that too.
About that, doctor? I mean, as far as regularity, I mean, is it your opinion that obviously we need to have at least one good bowel movement a day or two or what?
Yes, 1 to 2 is optimal. A lot of the naturopathic, pure straight naturopathic doctors, they describe it like this. When your mouth is chewing food and you swallow, there's a valve that opens between your food pipe and your stomach to let the food into your stomach. At the same time, there's a valve at the bottom of the stomach that opens to let the food out of your stomach into your small intestine. At the same time, there's a valve between the small intestine and large intestine that should open at the same time and let the food pass from small to large bowel. And then the final valve to let the food out. So with that theory in mind, they're saying if you're eating 3 times a day, those valves should all, like a domino effect, you should be pooping 3 times a day. But I'd say 1 to 2 is good. I mean, we need to eliminate this stuff out of us or it just sits in the colon and kind of putrefies.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
But part of that talk, did we have a caller?
Yeah, there was somebody trying to call. You can call back. I don't know why we might be here. Let's try it again. I don't know if that was me or them or something, but let's try to get them on. Good morning. Welcome into You're the Cure.
Well, I've enjoyed the show this morning, and I've got a couple of questions.
Okay.
The first one was, you're talking about Lubbock being number 2 in the flu. What is all of that about? I hadn't even heard that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, what the number 2 ranked municipality, so I don't know what the cutoff for that is population-wise. But
per capita.
Yeah, per capita, we're getting hit the hardest with flu than anybody else.
Sorry. Yeah, so that's what that was actually from the CDC.
Yeah, and as to why is that, I don't think anyone knows. Everyone's just having conjecture and theory. Of course, my theory is going to boil down to the terrain. I don't think the flu virus necessarily just loves this geographic area more. I think our internal terrain as a population is pretty disrupted. You know, some folks would point to the cloud of glyphosate that hangs out over us for most of the year. That's very disrupting to our immune system. But who knows? It's a combination of things, I'm sure. But bottom line, again, we don't have to be fearful and say, oh, no, I have to move away from Lubbock. No, you just work on your internal terrain, get it boosted up.
Yeah, but that's the Center for Disease Control. That's the number they've put out. When I read that, I read the same story you did. I was shocked by this. I thought, well, but then again, on the other hand, I'm not surprised either, Because even myself, I've been on and off sick since before Thanksgiving. How yeah. ridiculous.
Yeah.
All right. Good morning. Welcome into, I'm sorry, you can call back. Lost you, 745-5800 or 806.
Well, what I was going to talk about, here's this caller again.
Try it again. Go ahead.
Well, maybe it'll hold on this time. One thing he's talking about was the copper in the system, and I take zinc and copper, and I have read that you can actually overload the copper, and then you messed up something else. So what is your max dose? You know, like in this time of the year, what would be your maximum dose you could take on a daily basis to keep your copper, keeping your immune system running?
Well, my thoughts on the copper.
Wow, I lost him again. That was somebody.
Hopefully he's listening.
I don't know who that was.
Yeah, I really want him to hear this. I think it's not as beneficial to take elemental copper, which is what you're taking. If you're looking at milligrams on a bottle, you're taking a form of copper that the body has a hard time using, utilizing, recognizing. Bioavailable, these vitamins and minerals need to be in a form that the body recognizes and can readily use. So I don't really recommend taking a bottle of copper that has any milligram on it. Where I prefer that you get your copper is how God intended it to get into the human body, which is through our food. And the best source of copper in food is beef liver and organ meats in general. That's where copper is stored in these animals. You can get copper also from whole food vitamin C. Whole food means it's not just ascorbic acid. Ascorbic acid doesn't have copper in it. Vitamin C, as we've described before, it's kind of like the entire automobile, where ascorbic acid is just the outer shell of the automobile. Whole food vitamin C has everything. It's got the steering wheel, the transmission, the tires, the whole deal. You want the whole deal, and that's only found in food. So food that's rich in vitamin C, of course, citrus fruits, lemons, limes, oranges, grapefruits, bell peppers, all the peppers, kiwi. So vitamin C rich foods you want. The problem we run into there is these foods are picked a week early. And vitamin C, this is just an example. A green bean has vitamin C, but 7 days after you pick that green bean off the vine, it lost 77% of its vitamin C in 7 days. So I still encourage you to eat lots of colorful vegetables and fruits that have the vitamin C, but beef liver is where you really got to push it for the copper. So
what about eggs?
That's my recommendation. Yeah, there's some in eggs too. There's some in spices, you know, turmeric.
Oh, I use that spices. A lot. I like that.
But pound for pound, bang for buck, it's going to be beef liver.
Oh, no doubt about it. But I take that also, that vitamin C you bought, sweetheart, that has the
innate response.
Yes, and it's got copper in it.
Innate response is a good source of whole food vitamin C.
Yeah, that's
Pure what I Radiance use. Is another one. They have a powder that's whole food.
I was taking a ton of that when I was just, you know, congested and not feeling good. And I think it really helps a lot.
Well, it's important to get the whole food version.
He also mentioned he was taking zinc.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's kind of a balance you've got to get. When you take just zinc, you can really overload and actually block the copper from working right. So, again, I'm shying away from taking these things in a bottle or elemental forms. I like food-based forms.
Okay, another text coming in saying, please explain what's better to take, a cod liver oil or DHA fish oil.
Okay, here's my thought on that. Cod liver oil is my answer. And a very minimally processed cod liver oil. And the reason why, there's a ratio of nutrients in the cod liver oil that's perfect. Not only the EPA DHA, but your vitamin A to vitamin D ratio is perfect. When you find vitamin A in nature, there's a 10-to-1 ratio with vitamin D, and that's exactly what the body needs. And so we can get vitamin D dominant when we're just taking vitamin D. So we want it to be balanced. But the same with EPA DHA. These are the different fats that we find in fish oil. Most fish oils are going to be highly processed to get the DHA to a high content, like 500 milligrams. When you start processing DHA and EPA out of the fish, you have to do stuff to that fish, to that oil, to concentrate the DHA that high. You've got to extract it somehow. So there's temperature and pH and chemical and different ways, different means to assist in this extraction that degrade the oils. Now, you can get some high-quality ones, like Orthomolecular has a high-quality one. It's minimally processed. Nordic Naturals has a high-quality one. And they're okay for the short term. They're very anti-inflammatory. DHA is anti-inflammatory. But long-term usage, day after day after day, forever and ever, you can get DHA dominant, meaning you just have too much of that particular fat. It needs to be in the right balance, the right ratio. So short-term, especially someone that's been on standard American diet for a while and they want to hit some high-quality fish oil for a month or two or three, or someone really, really inflamed, you know, rheumatoid arthritis or something, and they want to hit something hard while they're working on their diet and lifestyle, it's fine. But long term, I think DHA dominance is an issue, and I wouldn't do it. That's why I like the cod liver oil.
I like just eating a can of sardines. Like,
yep.
Those are great, right? Anchovies.
The small fish, the sardines, the anchovies, the mackerel, that's the best. I mean, you don't have to worry about all the different ratios. Am I getting enough DHA or too much? Or is the EPA and DHA balanced right?
Sardines,
blah, blah, blah.
Cracker.
You just get
minus
it from God made the ratios just right in these food products. So just eat the food. The problem is people aren't used to eating that food, or it's hard to come by. So there's a role for supplementation for a certain time period. But long term, you really need to find good food sources.
Well, I think when you eat it whole like that, doctor, you're getting so much more benefit, right?
Exactly. There's these other nutrients, kind of like I mentioned with the plants, phytonutrients. They all work together in synergy. And we have delineated out a few of these chemicals and a few of the products in the fish oil. But yeah, when you put it all together, and people don't even think about the vitamin A and D ratio that's in the fish oil. So it's really important to get it in a whole food form as best you can.
As best you can.
Okay. Knowing that our food's depleted and you may have to supplement with a whole food supplement when you can.
Okay, a couple of texts here. Matt, I guess, just joining us a little bit late, because we talked about this already, but real quick, he says, do you think the dryness in the air has anything to do with an increase in the flu or sickness in general?
Yeah, what we said earlier was, yes, probably. This is just my opinion. I don't have any research to back this up, but my thought is when it's been so dry and there's less vegetation, the dust is easier to blow around, you're going to just, you know, stir things up in the air more. When it's less humid, I think the air moves around a little more, particles in the air move around a little more.
Greg wants to know, what are your thoughts on MCT oil?
MCT oil is good, very beneficial. It's good fat. It's good for you, good for your brain, good for your energy, good for your mitochondria. The mitochondria are your energy factories, and so that MCT oil is very good fuel for the mitochondria.
Taken daily, or?
Yeah, you can do it daily. That's going to the whole keto thing. Keto is when you're eating a high fat, moderate protein, very low carb. Some people like to do that daily forever and ever, and they feel great. Other people like to move in and out of that. Go very low carb keto, MCT oil supplement with the keto to get their good fat in intermittently. You know, move in and out. Do it on the week and not the weekends, or do it for a month and take it off for a month, or do it seasonally or whatever. Intermittently changing up that diet. And that's probably where I fall, that I feel better when I change it up some.
Robin wants to know, what was the recommended treatment for severe gum disease?
I don't know that we talked about that, but here's what I would say is oil pulling would be a great benefit. That's where you just swish around like coconut oil or that MCT oil that we just mentioned, or avocado oil, not canola or vegetable oil or soy or corn, but a healthy oil, avocado oil, coconut oil, MCT oil. Swish it in the mouth for a couple of minutes, maybe 5 minutes even. That'll pull toxins out of the gums. Second thing, you want to encourage your good bacteria to grow in your mouth. And that means you don't want to use mouthwash or toothpaste that kill bacteria, which is just about all of them. they all have something in them, that even the natural toothpaste will have tea tree oil or something that kills germs.
What if you're
I'm not into that. I'm into nourishing your flora. Real quick, a toothpaste called Revitin, R-E-V-Y-T-Y-N, I believe.
Heard of it, yeah.
It's full of prebiotics and probiotics for the mouth. It encourages good bacterial growth, which will in turn help your gums to heal. And, of course, flossing can help with that too, gum disease.
Well, and I don't have gum disease, but what about all the smokeless tobacco users out there that could run the risk of getting leukoplakia and gum disease and things like that? Would that be good for me if I'm going to continue to use this nasty stuff to do that every once in a while?
Yeah.
As a preventative?
Yeah, it'd be good. Better than all the other stuff for sure.
Or just,
but that's like
say,
a couple of squirt water guns
quit,
on this raging
though.
Fire.
Yeah.
Bonfire. Let me take a couple water guns to it.
Hey,
quit
that,
the skull.
That toothpaste, it's not cheap.
No, it's cheap for our members. I think online it's like $14. We can get it cheaper, so our members get it for
$10,
I think.
What about if you brush your teeth with like baking soda?
Yeah. That's not a prebiotic, but it's better, in my opinion. Baking soda and peroxide is a better option than your regular old toothpaste that are going to kill a bunch of germs. But there's activated charcoal toothpaste that are based in activated charcoal, and that's good too. But what
those
people have to realize,
you got a big
a lot of black spitting out of your mouth. But if you're not eating a lot of sugar, you're not eating the standard American diet, you're rinsing your mouth out good, you're flossing, or a water pick is really, really good for the gums. I really like water picks. Then you don't have to worry about these germs so much. I don't have bad breath anymore because my mouth's in full of candida. It's not full of the yeast that sugar and grains, the standard American diet, are going to encourage. We'll have to talk more in a future show because I know we're almost out of time, but I just read this article last week on gum disease, and it's linked to cancer. We already knew it's linked to heart disease, dementia, all kinds of stuff.
We talked about it last week on the show a little bit.
Because the bugs get in from the mouth into the diseased gum, into the bloodstream, into the body, drive inflammation.
Mm-hmm. Disease starts in the mouth.
It does. Know? It's huge. So oil pulling, a good toothpaste that's not going to kill all the bugs, get off the mouthwash and toothpaste that kills bugs, and encourage your probiotics to grow.
I'm going to try to get this guy on. He's having problems with his phone line. Good morning. Welcome into the show.
I think my phone needs some vitamin C.
Okay. Go ahead.
Before we get cut off, the innate response vitamin C, you said is a good source of copper?
Correct. All whole food vitamin C has copper at the center of it. At the core of vitamin C is copper. But it's got to be whole food C, not ascorbic acid that you get at the grocery store, Walgreens. So Innate Response is a really good source of whole food vitamin C. Pure Radiance powder is, if you want to like make a smoothie and add this to your smoothie, it's a powder version. Pure Radiance powdered whole food vitamin C.
Greg wants to know again what brand MCT oil do you use? Do you like a particular brand?
The last time I got one, it was Bulletproof, I believe. Dave Asprey, Bulletproof. And I'm sure there's lots of good brands. But that's where I rely on a good health food store. You know, like Natural Health Market here locally.
Vitamins Plus.
Those guys research, and they know the trusted brands. And I don't do a whole lot of MCT oil. Again, I try to get mostly through the diet. But I was doing it for a while, and I'll do it occasionally. Again, I try to mix things and get some diet variation. But my supplements are getting really streamlined to whole food-based, you know, really focusing on the copper, trying to eat my liver to get the copper. But
health coach, do you use MCT oil in anything?
Not just – I use coconut oil, but I don't use just MCT oil.
Just by itself.
We'll have to ask Angie. Angie's our MCT oil keto kind of expert at the clinic, and I know she's done a lot of different
things.
Well,
I know it's good stuff. I mean –
yeah, well, it's good fuel for the mitochondria. Bottom line, when your mitochondria burn sugar for fuel, it's a dirty burning fuel. That sugar has byproducts after you burn it that damage the mitochondria and the DNA in your mitochondria. Fat burns really, really cleanly, and MCT oil is a clean burning fat, very efficient too. You're going to rev up at 140 miles per gallon when you're burning fat for fuel. When you burn sugar and grain for fuel, you're at 32 miles per gallon. Your mitochondria make 32 ATP molecules when you're burning glucose or sugar for fuel, as opposed to 140 ATP is when you're burning fat for fuel. And ATP is good. That's your energy. So who wouldn't want to be at 140 miles per gallon? And your exhaust is a lot cleaner. So we need to get off this high carb, high sugar, high grain diet and get down more to a high fat, moderate protein, low carb. Some people translate low carb into high protein. I'm going to quit eating grain and wheat, corn, and rice, and sugar, and I'm going to eat a ton of meat. No, don't do that. That meat can turn into sugar. It's called a gluconeogenesis. Your body will actually take that protein when you get excess protein, turn it into sugar. So you want lots of colorful vegetables, some high-quality fats, and a lot of them. Meat should be more of a delicacy. The portion should be small. There should be a lot of organ meat involved, not just muscle meat, and it should be more of a delicacy is the general diet that I think we all need to be eating.
Robin says, exactly, thanks. Please do a show on gum disease. My husband has the whitest teeth, but the worst gum disease.
Yeah, we definitely will. In fact, I've reached out to a couple dentists. The guy that invented that toothpaste even had, just haven't heard back from him. So we'll do that for sure. Oral health is huge. I think there's an oral health summit that's going to go on in March. You can just Google that, oral health summit, and listen to that, I'm sure, for free online.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I want to leave it with this. I mentioned it, so I need to follow through on it. My first Tuesday talk, which is up on our website, it's on Facebook, and I recommend people look at it because I talk about how drugs work, and maybe that's what we'll talk about next week. But all drugs work by blocking an enzyme or inhibiting a receptor. So Tamiflu blocks an enzyme called neuraminidase, ASE. Anything that ends in ASE, that's an enzyme. So neuraminidase is what Tamiflu blocks. This enzyme is what allows a virus to extrude out of your cell and go run around in your body. So if it can block that extrusion of virus from your cell, then that's good. The virus can't get out and can't infect other cells and infect you more. That's how it works. So Cochrane Review wanted to look and see, okay, the mechanism in the lab looks like it works good. It blocks that enzyme. Does it actually work in people? Does it decrease your flu? Does it decrease hospitalization? Does it decrease complications that lead to death, like pneumonia? And so they went to review it. Cochrane Review is an independent group of researchers from around the world, and they're the gold standard. All doctors know to look to Cochrane if you really want unbiased, evidence-based reviews. And so they went to study it, and what they found was they couldn't because there are only a limited number of published studies. So they went to get the clinical study reports. These are reports from the drug company that they don't publish. They put it in the filing cabinet. The drug company wouldn't give it to them. So they used Freedom of Information suit to get it and took 4 years of this fighting in the courts to get the information. They got 160,000 pages of these research clinic study reports. And bottom line, here's what Tom Jefferson, Dr. Jefferson said, who was the head of this study from Cochrane. The evidence does not support claims that these drugs, Tamiflu and Relenza, lower the risk of complications of the flu, such as pneumonia, or that the benefits outweigh the risk. I would not give it for symptom relief. I'd give Tylenol instead, is what the head guy of this research study showed. What the benefit it showed was it reduced flu by 16.8 hours. It reduced your flu symptoms by 16 hours only, at risk of all the potential side effects. It did not decrease hospitalizations, did not decrease time that you missed work. But the point of that was the drug company hid the studies. They had to be sued to get the studies. They only publish what looks somewhat beneficial, like 16 hours of symptom relief. They don't publish all the negative studies. And that's something we talked about in the first Tuesday talk. Everybody should go watch it online and learn more about how drugs work and how studies or publication bias is rampant in our medical world, unfortunately. We'll talk about that more next week, maybe.
Dr. Ben Edwards, everybody. Of course, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You've been listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580. We'll see you back here next week, Dr. Edwards. Have a wonderful rest of the week.
Thank you. Y'all too.
Stick around now. Unconfused, coming up next right here on AM 580.